I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love: books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
This episode of LiveWire is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, and then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
From PRX, it's LiveWire. Recorded from our actual homes, welcome to the LiveWire House Party. This week with writers Cheryl Strayed and John Mualim, and music from Charlie Brand of Miniature Tigers. I'm your announcer, Elena Passarello. And now, live and direct from a small room just off his kitchen, the host of LiveWire, Luke Burbank.
Thank you, Elena Passarello. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Yes, I have my own sound effect box that I have here with me because, Elena, if I tell a joke and I don't have the roar and laughter of the crowd to let me know that it was funny, I mean, was it even a funny joke?
That's true. That's the tree forest one hand clapping
yeah.
Cohen of LiveWire House Party.
Wow, there's your English professor background. You brought a Cohen into the show 1 minute in.
And I think I misused it, so.
What do you think of our snappy new LiveWire House Party theme music?
I love it. It has a kind of like, remember MTV Unplugged?
That was what we were going for.
Really?
Yeah, that's the LiveWire House Band. That's A. Walker Spring, Ethan Fox Tucker, and Sam Tucker recording the tracks at their respective homes and then emailing them to each other and then building a song.
Our band, I miss them so much. I wish they were here right now.
Yeah, they are really an amazing creative force that probably doesn't get enough credit on the show. Mm. So we will be very excited to be reunited with them whenever we're all allowed back together in public. For the time being, though, we're doing this thing called the LiveWire House Party. So it'll be me at my house. Elena is going to be at her house. We're going to have our guests join us from wherever it is they are sheltering in place. We have a really great show in store for everybody this week. The other cool thing about this version of the program is that you, the LiveWire listeners, can check in virtually. Each week we're putting out an audience question and asking you to give us your answer to that, and then we collect those up. This week the question to the audience was, what's the one non-essential thing you wish you had more of? And I was thinking about my answer to that question this week, Elena, and it's right in front of me. I don't know if the audience can hear this, but this is the sound of 3 Cadbury mini eggs, which is all I have left. And I have been rationing these things. I mean, they're definitely non-essential, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if I run out, I cannot in good conscience go back to the grocery store to buy more, right? Because what I think we're sort of understanding, and I think rightfully so, is that we should all try to stay out of the stores unless it's very essential.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go to the store to buy toilet paper or to buy some kind of real basic supply. But were I standing in line holding a bag of candy eggs, I feel like I would be inviting the scorn of everyone else in the store. And honestly, it would be probably deserved. What's your answer to that audience question this week, Elena? What is a non-essential thing that you wish you had more of?
I wish I had more episodes of The Masked Singer.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I know. I wouldn't have thought that Well, actually, I totally would have thought that I would have been into it. But now it is like my ray of sunshine, my yoga mm-hmm. class, my spiritual meditation. I used to watch it. It comes on Wednesday nights, and it is not David's thing. And he works on Wednesday nights in a restaurant. So I would quietly watch it by myself. But now he's home, and so I had to admit mm-hmm. to my love of Masked Singer, and he has to watch it with me. I take so much joy in the absurdity of that show. And, you know, Sarah Palin was on it dressed as a rainbow bear singing Baby Got Back.
Yes, I was aware of that because the internet told me, and it confirmed my suspicion that that is not the show for me.
No.
But listen, do you hear this disdain in my voice? I'm the person who's power watching a show called Below Deck, which is a reality show about people that work on a fancy yacht. It's a very upstairs, downstairs kind of thing. So what are the LiveWire listeners saying as far as their answer to that question we put out there? What's the one non-essential thing you wish you had more of?
Here's one from Sam. Sam would like better lighting for my video conference calls because I look like a troll.
Did you know that there are now filters, you know, apps being made that will filter your face on the conference call so that you will maybe it will be a bit more flattering? And that would have just seemed like absolute madness to me a week ago. And now I'm trying to figure out how I can get that thing set up on this call.
You can also change the background. So you could have like the diner from Saved by the Bell, the Max.
Yeah.
Right. Here's one from Bex. Bex wishes that Bex had more fancy hand lotion because my hands are suffering with all this washing.
Yes.
Ugh, yeah.
The skin on my hands is reflecting the fact that they are not used to being washed 30 times a day.
Do you sing a song when you wash your hands?
I have been cycling through the songs. I did the Happy Birthday song twice. Then I started doing I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor because I saw a really charming video where she was singing it and washing her hands.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess that's kind of where I'm at right now. What are you using?
I use the Jeopardy theme song.
One time through or twice?
I do it as long as the final Jeopardy because I know that's 30 mm-hmm. seconds. So then I get an extra 10 seconds. And then I sing alternate lyrics. So it'll be like, uh-huh. I had sausage gravy again. I am going to gain 100 pounds. You know, like keeping it topical, right?
Sure. All right, let's get our first guest on the line. His new book is called This Is Chance, The Shaking of an All-American City. And it's the story of how the town of Anchorage, Alaska responded to an earthquake back in 1964. And I was reading it this week, and it just felt so relevant, I think, to a feeling that I think a lot of us are having right now, like our lives are in this very unpredictable place. So let's dial him up now. John Mualim, welcome to the LiveWire house party.
Thank you so much for having me at your house party.
This is very different than the last time we had you on LiveWire. That was in a theater. There was a crowd. What for you is a more anxiety-producing thing, to be like on a stage with real people or to just be in a weird Zoom conference call with me and Elena?
I think this is more nerve-wracking. I mean, I've been on stage before. I've never been wedged into a weird plush pillow in my bathroom talking to you on a computer long distance. So I fear the new.
Aside from this recording, how generally are you holding up being mostly trapped at home?
Pretty well, actually. I really don't have anything to complain about in my immediate life. I'm a writer who works at home. I go many, many days without seeing people. Usually it takes some effort for me to get within 6 feet of people usually. My life has really not changed to the degree that this kind of national crisis might make you think.
Speaking of crises, let's start at the kind of critical moment of this book, This Is Chance, that is coming out this week. It's the 1964 Alaska earthquake. I have to admit, I was not familiar with this event, which, as I read the book, continued to completely shock me just in terms of its magnitude, literally and figuratively. For people that don't remember this, can you kind of give a sense of what an event this was?
This happened on Good Friday evening in Alaska in 1964, in March 1964. And yeah, it was a 9.2 magnitude quake. It's the largest quake in North American history. It's the second largest in the world. And, you know, even more kind of brutal and surreal was that in Anchorage, at least, the shaking lasted for about 4.5 minutes. I've been trying to describe it this way. So if you put on Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You when the shaking started, the song would finish and then you would still sort of be thrashing around for another 10 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, that you're writing about, in particular, the experience of a journalist in Anchorage named Jeannie Chance, but you're writing about her and her son are in their car when it starts, and she's trying to figure out what's going on. She thinks it's a blown tire, and everything is swaying, and buildings are coming apart and coming back together. And then you just mentioned casually that this is like almost 5 minutes. This earthquake was so unprecedented that people had a hard time wrapping their minds around what was actually happening, which I feel like is also being played out in the current day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read literally hundreds of firsthand accounts, many of which were gathered up by this reporter, Jeannie Chance, after the quake. And this phenomenon happens again and again, where you can just see that people cannot find the word or the idea to encapsulate what's happening to them, that the world has just turned, you know, so bizarre during this time that it takes their minds a little while to catch up, even come up with the word earthquake. You know, like one guy is kneeling down by this car, trying to start this car, and he just feels his body heaving side to side and starts to feel dizzy and just assumes he's having a heart attack. So yeah, there's this dissonance. There's this inability to realize that, you know, the world is actually convulsing.
This is LiveWire Radio. It's episode one of the LiveWire House Party. I'm Luke Burbank. I'm at my actual house down at her house in Corvallis, is our announcer, Elena Passarello. And then John Mualim is here as well. He's the author of the new book, This is Chance, The Shaking of an All-American City. He is cocooned in his bathroom telling us about his new book. So this journalist, Jeannie Chance, who is kind of the centerpiece of this book, what was her job at the time of this earthquake happening in Alaska?
Yeah, Jeannie was a pretty fascinating and unique figure for the time. You know, she was a woman. She'd worked in radio for a couple of years in Anchorage at the time of the quake, but really only in the last year or so had she kind of transcended the expectations of what a woman should be doing in broadcasting at the time. So usually, you know, the few women that were working in radio, at least in Alaska at that time, were having, you know, recipe swap shows or shows about homemaking and things like that. You know, women's concerns is how one letter I found described it. And whereas Jeannie really, you know, through her own talent and her own persistence, kind of muscled her way into this role as a kind of roving reporter around Anchorage. So she had this little radio unit in her car and she would just range all over Anchorage and all over the greater Anchorage area and report on whatever was going on. You know, Jeannie Chance, KENI News on the Go. That was her sort of tagline. And her voice was really part of the fabric of the city at that time. It was a voice you'd hear every day kind of telling you what was happening in town.
How did she end up in this role of kind of almost like crisis coordinator for this whole city?
She was most surprised of all, I think, initially. So it was really just a quirk of luck that she happened to be downtown when the earthquake hit. And she was running an errand with her son. And so when the radio station finally got back on the air about an hour after the quake was finished, she was really one of the only people at the station who was in any sort of position to describe what had just happened. She'd seen a lot of the damage downtown herself. She'd kind of hustled around a lot of key areas downtown, just trying to absorb what would happen so that when she got back on the air, she could report on it. And from there, she wound up actually broadcasting from inside the police station for the next several days. So she was, you know, passing messages from city officials, you know, we need diesel fuel over here, or we need a doctor here. And then also passing messages from individual people trying to find their kids or their sisters or their husbands, or to just tell those people that they were okay.
And I think it must have been about 3 years ago, John, that I heard through the grapevine that you were doing a radio play about the Anchorage earthquake. And I'm assuming that you hadn't written the book by then. So how did that factor into your process of getting this, of working through this project?
That was a really phenomenal opportunity. So I'd done a couple projects with a group of musicians, most of whom are members of the Decemberists. Portland's own.
Oh, your theme song designers, yeah?
Yes, that's right, for your walking podcast.
So we were hoping to do another thing together, and you know, we're given an opportunity to do that by the podcast 99% Invisible. And at that time, I was already gathering up some research about the quake and about Jeannie. And I thought, oh, here's a chance to really, you know, clear the time to go a little bit deeper in here and see what's there. So it was really a way to test, you know, whether it could be a book. And yeah, we put together this show that was sort of me narrating the story of the quake with music. And, you know, 99% Invisible's Roman Mars and Avery Trufelman both played some of the characters. Mm-hmm. And so we did some touring with that in 2016 and 17. And I guess by the time we'd finished that project, I had just amassed so much material, and I was just blown away by the resolution at which a lot of these stories had been captured and preserved, mm-hmm. that it felt like, you know, how can I not tell the story? I mean, literally people, I would track down survivors of the quake, and some of these people, you know, they didn't live to see me finish the book. You know, it just really mm-hmm. felt like the story was slipping away. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was not, by the time we were done with that project, I was already pretty much off and running. It just didn't really even feel like a choice anymore.
You're listening to episode one of the Livewire House Party. I'm Luke Burbank at my actual house. Elena Passarello is at her home. We're talking to John Mualim, who's at his house. And all of you are out there in listener land, wherever you might be. Thanks for hanging out with us. We got to take a quick break, but we will be right back in a moment. Livewire is supported in part by Fully. Based in Portland, Oregon, Fully is an amazing company that sells and distributes things that will help you feel healthier while you are being productive doing your work. How do I know this? Well, because I use a Jarvis standing desk from Fully when I am on stage recording Livewire. That's right. I can set that thing at any different height that works for me in that moment. It keeps the blood flowing, keeps me feeling engaged. I think you can hear the results, my friends, coming through the radio and the podcast. If you would like to stay healthy and productive while you're being productive at your work, whether it's at home or in the office, you got to check out what the folks at Fully are doing. Go to fully.com/livewire. That's fully.com/livewire. They've also got the Cooper Standing Desk Converter. That gives you the ability to set your desk at any height you want as well. And just figure out a spot that works for you. I promise it'll make a difference in your work productivity and how good you'll feel at the end of the day. I know it has for me. I also use the TikTok stool when I'm at home doing all of my radio show writing projects. It's made such a difference for me and for our whole Livewire staff, and I know you're going to have the same experience. So again, find out what Fully has got going on by heading over to Fully, that's fully.com/Livewire. Welcome back to the Livewire House Party, episode one. I'm Luke Burbank, broadcasting from a small room off my kitchen. Our announcer, Elena Passarello, is at her house in Corvallis, Oregon. Hey, Elena.
Hey. And
checking in from his house in Washington State is John Mualim. He's author of the new book, This Is Chance, The Shaking of an All-American City. This book is about this 1964 earthquake that happened in Alaska and was incredibly damaging to, in particular, Anchorage, Alaska. I have to say, John, as I was reading this book this week, there were some things that were eerily similar to what we're all going through right now and some things that were very dissimilar. One thing that seemed to kind of echo for me was this feeling for the folks living in Alaska at this time that everything about their life had changed in a matter of moments. Now, it's been more than 5 minutes that we've been dealing with the shutdowns around the country. But I think a lot of people are also having that sense that, like, life is never going to be the same. What do you feel like you have gleaned about our current situation from having spent a bunch of time immersing yourself in the response that these folks had in Alaska in 1964?
You know, one of the things that I think I first related to in the research that I was finding was just this predicament of Anchorage. Even before the quake, this sense that everything about this community was provisional, that, you know, they were the biggest city in Alaska. They really thought that they were at the forefront of showing, you know, what this new state could offer the rest of America. But they also knew that they hadn't really figured out how to have a sustaining economy. And there was this mix of aspiration and anxiety that maybe this wasn't going to hold. Maybe, you know, at some point, as one guy put it to me, you know, we weren't all going to leave, but, you know, we might. And right. So what I think working on the book for so long just made me internalize this understanding that life is always jagging like this in one way or another. There's these swerves all over the place where something that's unimaginable suddenly becomes real life. I don't know if I was any better prepared for what's happening now. I'm not going to claim that. But we all bring our own skill set to these moments of crisis. You know, Jeannie happened to have a job where she talked on the radio. She gathered information, she distributed on the radio. That was exactly what was needed in the situation she walked into, and she filled that role. So I think we just all need to look for those opportunities and do the best that we can with them.
Well, John Mooallem, thank you so much for joining us for the first ever LiveWire house party. It's been really fun. The book is amazing, by the way. The book is This Is Chance, The Shaking of an All-American City. Thanks for talking to us. We release you now to go back to taking care of your children, who are barely on the other side of a very thin bathroom door somewhere in your house.
Thank you very much, guys.
Bye, John.
Bye.
This is LiveWire from PRX. I'm your host, Luke Burbank, and this is episode one of the LiveWire house party. We are recording the show from our actual homes. I'm in Bellingham, Washington, where I live. Elena Passarello is in Corvallis, Oregon. And of course, the listeners to LiveWire are spread out wherever they are. Hope everybody is safe and doing okay. We asked this week, what is one non-essential thing that you wish you had more of? And the LiveWire listeners sent in their answers via various social media. Elena Passarelli, you've been collecting those up. What are the LiveWire listeners wishing they had more of? Something that's non-essential.
Here's one from Tracy. Tracy says, face masks, but not the medical kind, but those sheet masks that you let soak on your face and that make you look like Jason from Friday the 13th. Do you know what we're talking about?
No, I don't. Not to overly gender this, but that has totally missed me.
They're these weird paper thin, they feel like wet paper towels, and they have eye holes and a mouth hole, and you leave it on there for, you know, 20 minutes, and it's like a deep moisturizing. So like after you're on a plane or something and your skin feels all dry, you just throw one of those on. Sometimes people wear them on planes.
That sounds upsetting. If you're not the person wearing the mask, yeah. It's like, yeah, they've just wheeled Hannibal Lecter onto this flight.
Another reason not to fly right now.
All right, what else are the LiveWire listeners saying?
Here's one from Ariana. Puppies for emotional support because Netflix and wine aren't doing the trick.
I think that, you know, there are actually a lot of animal rescue organizations that are offering opportunities for people to foster animals. Because, of course, there's always more animals that need homes than there are homes for them. And there are a lot of people right now who are stuck inside and could really use a friend. I know that that's a real thing, actually. So I don't know. I mean, would you consider, you've got too much going on with your cats as it is, right?
I basically have an animal shelter in my house.
So, of course, each week we're going to be asking the audience to answer a question for us. But we even have some of our previous favorite guests from LiveWire checking in on this very topic. Bruce Campbell from the Evil Dead movies took a moment to record himself at his house. You know, he lives on like this lavender farm out in the middle of nowhere in Oregon.
Really?
And yeah. He told us about it on a previous episode of LiveWire. So he actually recorded an answer to this question and sent it in. Take a listen to this. It's Bruce Campbell answering our audience question.
Hi folks, this is Bruce Campbell from Ash vs. Evil Dead. The one non-essential item I wish I had more of is really, it's not so much an item, it's an activity. It's bowling. I want to bowl. I want to get back on those lanes and stink up the joint. Yep, I want to watch the 9-year-old girl beat drunk Uncle Joe, the bragger. That's what I want to do. But I get it, hands all over balls, smelly feet everywhere, into strange shoes. I understand why they shut it down, but it doesn't make me happy. I need to get back out there because it's the great equalizer. The great fall and the humble rise. So hopefully, humble bowling can return to my lexicon because I miss it. And it's the one, quote, non-essential item I wish I had more of, even though I do consider it essential.
That is the most Bruce Campbell answer to a question you could ever imagine. I just love the idea of him out on his lavender farm thinking about bowling. All right, let's invite our next guest over to this Livewire house party. Cheryl Strayed is, of course, the author of the stupendously successful memoir Wild, which also ended up being a movie starring Reese Witherspoon. But she's also an expert advice giver. She had a column and a podcast called Dear Sugar for many years. And so we were thinking that with everybody being kind of on edge right now, she might be the perfect person to calm us all down a little bit. Cheryl Strayed, welcome to the Livewire house party.
I'm so glad to be here. Livewire is always a house I want to be in, Luke.
I know. You've been such a great friend of the show over the years. And then here we are in this sort of kind of maiden voyage of trying to do this new version of the show. And we said, if there's somebody who's going to be able to help us out this week, it is Cheryl Strayed. So thanks for doing this.
Oh, I'm only sad that I didn't get to sit in a grotty green room first and drink cheap white wine out of a plastic cup.
We can have a hazmat team bring some cheap wine over if it makes you feel more like you're being on the regular version of the show. How are you holding up with all of this kind of, being at home and not really having as much mobility as you're used to having?
You know, I vacillate. I think like a lot of people, I have many different experiences and emotions in any given day. I go from feeling afraid and worried and anxious about what's happening and especially about what's to come. I tend to be somebody who really likes to be in charge of everything. Mm. And the pandemic has sort of told me that I'm not, which is really sort of uncomfortable, right? And then other times I have had also these really beautiful moments where, I am trapped in a house with two teenagers and like most teenagers, they've been trying to socially distance from me and their father for a couple of years now. So, and now they're finally not successful at that. So, I think it's been really cool for us as a family to just be cooking meals together, and really basically spending time together and figuring out a way, the new way.
Does it feel like your kids are kind of reassessing that family connection, that thing that we were all teenagers at one point and it's the last place you want to be, but then suddenly, you're all trapped together. Are they showing up differently for these meals?
Yeah, I guess the thing that's been both an argument between and among us and also a point of kind of connection and beauty is really saying to them in this time that they're trapped and in some ways like held under the parental wing, if you will, we're also telling them you need to step up to this moment and make a plan. Like you need to make a plan for your day. You're not going to just sit and watch episode after episode of Grey's Anatomy all day, which, is fun to do, but at a certain point,
yeah, that was my plan for getting through this.
Can you come over to my house, Cheryl? I need this. I need this discipline.
We need this. But it's cool to actually put it in the kids' hands. These kids who go to school normally and who have their day structured for them, we're like, okay, you have to exercise every day. You have to make art every day. You have to read every day. Fill in the blank. You have to study algebra every day. And to put them in charge of it is pretty cool.
This is maybe a little bit of a weird question, but you famously hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. It was the basis of your book Wild. And there was a lot of kind of isolation in that, but it was almost the reverse of what a lot of us are going through right now. Is there anything from that experience, that solitude, that is actually carried over or has been informative to you about this version of your life?
Yes. There really has. I thought about that as well, because of course I was seeking social isolation. I wanted solitude. I wanted radical aloneness because I wanted to see what I would find there. And of course, it's a very different thing when you're forced into that. And I think that what really I learned on that hike is, that there are treasures there to be found if you're willing to get quiet enough and be patient enough to listen to them, to find them. I think that there's a very big difference between loneliness and being alone. And really, in so many ways, seeking that kind of sense of like, well, who am I, what's the deepest voice saying to me? And being alone, being silent, being sort of stepping back from the world like so many of us are having to do now. It's an opportunity to learn a lot about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're listening to the Livewire house party. This is episode 1. I am Luke Burbank, recording from my actual house in Washington State, our announcer, Elena Passarello, as at her house in Corvallis. Hi, Elena.
Greetings from the Pillow Fort.
And also we are talking to writer Cheryl Strayed. Cheryl, you are, of course, well-known for your books, but you also, throughout your career, have really kind of moonlighted in being an advice columnist. You had the Dear Sugar column. It was a podcast. It became the book Tiny Beautiful Things. And this just felt like the week where we really could sort of use those skills. A lot of our listeners and just a lot of the people in this country are feeling very uncertain. So we put the call out online to ask the LiveWire listeners if they had any questions for you, Cheryl. And boy, we got a lot of responses. And the reading of those questions was a pretty emotionally intense experience, I know, for me, for Elena, for our producers. It had me wondering, what is that like for you when you're in advice columnist mode and you're just hearing about these challenges that people are facing that can really be a very intense experience?
It's moving and intense, and there is a real sense of mission and service that I have. I think that was always, for me, the most compelling thing when I was actively writing the column or doing the podcast, is that I felt like, in the form of Dear Sugar, I finally found this way to join the two, I guess, calls I've always felt I had to be a writer, but also to be of service, to extend a kind of helping hand or an open heart to someone who needed that. And so it's overwhelming. I hope that when you were reading those letters, you felt this dual sense of things that I often feel is, you know, real sorrow and sympathy for the people writing to you, but also that sense like, okay, we're going to answer some of these questions. We're going to do something. We're going to try to illuminate that problem or offer some guidance on LiveWire. So here we go.
Yeah. So let's do that. Let's do that right now. Actually, Elena has a number of those questions and she'll read them. And then Cheryl, if we can kind of hear your advice down the transom, that would be great.
Awesome.
Here is an anonymously submitted question. It reads, Dear Sugar, I have a 15-year-old daughter who visits her dad every other weekend, plus weekly dinners at my home. He lives with other people and also works with the public and has a girlfriend, so no social distancing. I feel very vulnerable as I'm a therapist who works in my own private practice. I need to stay healthy. I have zero safety net, but I also want my daughter to see her dad. She needs him too. Should I tell them they can't see each other until this is over?
Wow. That's a really important question, and I think it's one question. At least my feeling about it is there's a pretty direct and easy answer to this one. And that is, you know, our first job as parents is to keep our kids safe. And it's not really this letter writer. It's not her against the father of her child. It's really, she needs to really make clear that it's our public health experts, our leaders, our governors, our mayors, the people who work at the CDC and who are all saying the same thing. And that is, we need to socially distance and we need to take it seriously and we need to do it now. Every day that we delay doing that has a public health impact and maybe a personal health one too. Mm-hmm. And so the advice I would give to this woman who's writing to us is to say, you know, she needs to really have a very serious conversation with her daughter's father and say, look, you know, I want to nurture this relationship between the two of you and we need to work out a way to do that that honors her safety. And maybe that's Skyping, you know, with the dad for this time where she's, you know, staying with her mom. Maybe the father, if he really can't bear to be away from his daughter, does what several of my friends have done. The people who work, whose partners are nurses or doctors, have actually, you know, rented an Airbnb for the month so that they're not exposing themselves to family members who they'd be putting at risk. And, you know, that's kind of a drastic measure. The great thing about a teenager is, you know, they're great on FaceTime.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I said Skype, but my own teens would be like, oh, mom, nobody Skypes, you know. So they would FaceTime or TikTok or Snippety Snapchat, whatever it is. My kids won't allow me to join Snapchat because they don't want to see my beautiful face in that forum. But, you know, I just think that she needs to not make this a kind of wrestling match between her and her ex that's over, like who loves the kid more, who does the kid love more, whose relationship is important. This is just simply about health. Mm-hmm. And we know that there really is very clear directives being given right now about staying, mm-hmm. you know, avoiding contact with as many people as possible.
That makes me think of this other kind of related problem that I've heard a lot of people are experiencing, where they have to be kind of bossy, not with partners or ex-partners, but with elders, parents, right?
Yeah.
I have parents that I am concerned about, and they have parents that are still alive that they're concerned about. My 90-year-old extrovert granddad is like, gonna go to the dry cleaners. So what's the mantra for like bucking yourself up to talk to a member of your intimate family, like the letter writer's partner, ex-partner and daughter, or our parents? How do you psych yourself up, or how do you tell yourself that it's okay to be a little bossy with people with whom you have that kind of relationship?
I think the difference is, you know, when you have an argument that's about your emotional truth or reality or your personal opinion, I think that that's a very different kind of argument than the one we're talking about here.
Okay.
Where we are really, this is an evidence-based argument. There is an argument that actually we know that the way this virus spreads is by close contact with others. And we know that the way to contain it is to stay away from as many people as possible. We know that whoever you are, you know, in physical contact with becomes a member of your viral family. And so the question is, would you like to have your daughter's viral family be two people, or would you like to have it be 10 plus whoever else you happen to come into contact that day? And I think that that's an argument that can be used in this case with this letter writer's ex, but also with your parents and your grandparents, that yes, you've always gone and done that thing that you like to do, but we're in different times. And the evidence tells us, in the case with older people, not only is it important to socially distance, but if you don't, you're really at, you know, you're in a high risk category. Mm-hmm. And the argument there really is no argument. It's about what you need to do for yourself and for the greater good.
Mm-hmm. What we've been doing in my family is organizing a Saturday all family Zoom conference meeting.
Yeah.
And then we know where my parents are, because we can physically see that they're indoors. So we can monitor them, and then we gently browbeat them into staying indoors.
So Luke, have your parents also been kind of difficult when it comes to social distancing?
Difficult might be overstating it, but it's been a challenge to impress upon them that like this is not a good time to go to Goodwill, even though there are some mm-hmm. screaming deals. I mean, mm-hmm. this is back when you even could do
yeah.
that, but like mm-hmm. there is generationally something I've experienced in my family where I'm one of seven kids. And me and my siblings are all very concerned about the safety of our parents, and we're all very much trying to stay socially distant. And my parents are doing it, but I think mostly so we will leave them alone about it. So whatever works.
I should say, too, because my father, Tony Passarello, is a huge fan of the show, Dad, you're doing a great job. So
okay.
He really is.
This is LiveWire Radio. It's actually the LiveWire House Party, Episode 1. This is our first full show where we're recording from our respective homes. I'm Luke Burbank up here in Bellingham, Washington. In Corvallis, Oregon, is Elena Passarello, our announcer. And in Portland is the writer Cheryl Strayed, who's been nice enough to join us this week and give some advice to the LiveWire listeners. Elena's got another question that was submitted via social media.
This submission reads, "Dear Sugar, of all the strangest experiences in my life, departing the Pacific Crest Trail after hiking the initial 110 miles because of the pandemic is near the top of the list. The urgency became apparent as I represented a danger to the people of the trail communities, despite the trail itself being one of the safest places in these times of self-quarantining. With all of the logistics required to attempt a through hike, I'm not sure if the opportunity may reasonably present itself again in the next 10 years. So here's the question. How does one go about modifying a long-standing dream to fit the realities of circumstances beyond one's control? Is my disappointment justified?"
Cheryl, are you familiar with the Pacific Crest Trail?
I'm familiar with the Pacific Crest Trail, otherwise known as the beloved PCT. And what this letter writer is saying when he or she, do we know the okay, when we're just going to call her a she, because I'm a she. What she's saying about the trail community is, of course, just so your listeners are clear about this, is when you're hiking a long trail, you're in the remote wilderness when you're on the trail, but you have to also pass through towns and communities, and sometimes it's just a post office and a bar and a grocery store or something, but you're, you know, periodically passing through these populated places so you can pick up your resupply box and your food and so forth. And so that's where the problem comes in. If you could just live in the wilderness and hike, you'd be fine during this time, but of course you can't. So I think it was wise to stop this hike. I'm glad that long distance hikers and those hikers out on the PCT are stopping those hikes right now. But yeah, I mean, I think you're not alone in being disappointed about a dream being crushed. I'm thinking so much right now about all the high school and college seniors who were entering the last couple of months of their, you know, high school or college years, and how crushing it is that they don't get to have those festivities and ceremonies, or any number of people who have planned weddings during this time, people who had big trips or journeys. I myself am booked to go to Wales on a long hike in July. And I've not yet officially canceled, but I can see that coming. And it's disappointing. I think it's especially crushing. I know what a feat it is to logistically plan a long distance hike of the sort that you need to plan when you're going to go out on the PCT for 5 months or so. And what I would say to you is, first of all, you know, be disappointed. Know that you're not alone. Do what you need to do to get over that. It's not the first time you've been disappointed, and it won't be the last. So go, you know, scream into the wilderness or a paper bag or whatever you do. Talk to your friends about it, bitch about it, complain about it, all the things that you do. And then realize that so many are with you. So many others are, you know, you're not there alone. Mm. And that there will be another day. This is the most important thing. There are adventures to be had that we'll get to have when this pandemic is over. The Pacific Crest Trail has been there for many years, and it will continue to be there. You can still go walk on it, when it's safe to do so. And yes, logistically, it's hard to have to remount that trip, but it can be done. And it can be done in different ways, too. You don't have to hike the whole PCT at once to get it done. You can go, you did the first 110 miles. Maybe next summer you can do another 110, and every summer after that until it's done. There are all these ways that this moment is forcing us to rethink what we thought we could control. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a powerful lesson in itself. Very humbling. You thought you'd be on the PCT this summer. You don't get to be. Mm-hmm. Then what? That is always a moment of beautiful opening and opportunity when you answer that question.
That makes me think about some things that I've seen around in various communities of people providing, like you said, these other opportunities to engage, maybe not in the ideal way, but engage with people's dreams. You know, one of the high school things that happens when you're a senior and that I experienced was the big high school musical. And usually when you're a senior, you get to play like the biggest role you've gotten to play. But Lin-Manuel Miranda and I think Laura Bell Bundy, this kind of Tony winning Broadway actress, they both said, tape yourselves, high school students, singing your big number. And put it on Twitter, and I will watch them all, and I will be your audience, and I will comment. So,
that's so lovely.
They got these Broadway legends. They didn't get the hometown audience that they probably were hoping for, but they got, you know, the biggest names in Broadway witnessing their hard work. And I feel like that. I mean, it's not probably what they originally intended, but what a wonderful way to cope with this unexpected time.
I love it. You're right, Elena. People are getting really creative.
Yeah.
I mean, look at us here on this show and this house party. This isn't the way you do it either. And I'm sure when you first made that decision, like, we're going to have to shut down our live recordings, and you're all bummed about that because it's like the way you do it and it's so much fun. But then something else happens, and you don't know yet. You know, one of the things I wrote in Tiny Beautiful Things in one of my Dear Sugar columns is more will be revealed. And I think that that's a really important thing for us, all of us, to hold on to in this era where there is so much uncertainty. Mm. And what we do know is we're going to know a lot more as things reveal themselves. And some of those things are going to be lessons that we wish we hadn't had to learn. And some of them will be beautiful. And some of them will be the things that save us and that allow us to go forward after this in a new and exciting and powerful way.
Absolutely.
This is the Livewire House Party. It's our first episode of doing this. I'm Luke Burbank at my house. Elena Passarello is at her house in Corvallis, Oregon. Cheryl Strayed has been nice enough to join us to give some advice to listeners of the show who are in a bit of a quandary. What's the next question, Elena, that was sent in?
When the world is all but burning around us, how do you find the motivation to write? Writing feels almost pointless at times when there are so many other concrete things we could be doing to help others. In all of this, how do you write?
Well, you know, first of all, what I want to say is I completely disagree with the notion that writing isn't a concrete thing that can help others. When I think about the things that have saved me, that have consoled me, that have told me I'm not alone, that have made me feel like, I guess I'm just going to say the word that came to mind was that made me feel loved in a sort of larger way. It's stories. It's literature. It's the books and the poems and the essays that saw me or that allowed me to see someone else that I couldn't or wouldn't have seen otherwise, but for their story or for that sentence or that image. You know, we have that phrase like, you know, books save us or art saves us or, you know, I believe that. That is my religion. My religion is that we are saved by each other's stories, by each other's suffering, by each other's beauty. And all of that is given to us in the form of writers sitting down, not only at this moment, but yes, at this moment, and telling us what we need to know, telling us what we need to hear. And I, for one, am deeply committed to doing that. I am going to write like a, and I can't say the word on the radio, but I think those of you who are Sugar fans know what that word is.
We could say mother trucker.
By like a mother trucker, man.
Yeah, the Livewire House Party mother trucker is totally fine.
So, you know, I always think this question about writers comes up all the time at times of crisis. You know, people will be like, how can we write when, you know, I should be doing this or that? We can't all be doing the same thing. If, you know, nurses and doctors are amazing, and I'm so grateful to them. Police officers, paramedics, all the people who help us on those front lines, we need them desperately. We can't all be that same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think our work is always to say, what is it that I have to give? What is it that I do best? What is my work here? And then do that, give that, work at that. I have a deadline, a big deadline for a project I'm writing. I'm writing a screenplay. And it's due actually on May 15th. Mm. So that's less than 2 months from now. The world is burning. There's a pandemic. I have two teenagers I'm also supposed to somehow homeschool and cook for and, you know, everything else. And I'm going to, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to finish that screenplay on time. I'm going to do it. Wow. And I ask all of the listeners who have anything like that where they think, okay, I can't because I'm so distracted by the news, to say, we will, we must. Do it with me. I need, you know, I'm afraid too. You know, every time I think about that deadline, I kind of want to faint because I'm scared. Mm-hmm. But the promise I'm making to myself is that I will continue on my work. I will carry out my mission of using language and story to tell truth and beauty, to give truth and beauty to the world.
Are there any tips for how to get into your art brain when all of this stuff that's happening is sort of making your brain do other things?
Yeah, you just have to be a motherfucker. I mean, you really have to just say, okay, I'll say a radio friendly thing. Yeah, you just have to be disciplined. You know, you really have to decide that this is important and you have to do it and to not make excuses. I think a lot of us, you know, it's really fun to just get in your PJs and watch Schitt's Creek. I love that. I love doing that. But, you know, make a schedule, make a promise to yourself, follow through, do it. Don't think about it. Don't spend too much time on Twitter or whatnot, and just get to work. And it's hard. I want you to know that I say this with all humility, because it is also my challenge every day. And I am the laziest person who ever lived, who ever walked this earth. I promise you. But if I can do it, you can do it.
I have to say, Cheryl, that it's been so nice of you to join us on the show this week. And I had no idea that you were also under a writing deadline. So it's like, even nicer. If the screenplay is not finished and it's because you were doling out advice to the LiveWire house party listeners, I'm going to feel terrible. So
I've already decided, Luke, I would just blame it on you.
Okay, good. You know what? Maybe that's the service that I'm able to provide, is an excuse for Cheryl Strayed to not turn her screenplay in on time. If that's my contribution, I make it willingly and with love.
I'm forever grateful.
This is the LiveWire house party, doing the show from our respective homes, which is what we're going to be doing for the foreseeable future. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. I'm Luke Burbank with Elena Passarello and Cheryl Strayed. Cheryl is answering some questions from you, the LiveWire listening community. Elena, you've got those in front of you. What's the next advice question?
Dear Sugar, I am struggling with anger and judgment in a way that I am not familiar with. As a healthcare provider, an active participant in my community, and a lover of almost all human life, staying home and away from people seems like a doable, albeit extremely difficult, thing to do for a potentially very positive outcome. And while it makes sense to me that I'm frustrated with people who blatantly ignore the advice of government and Western medicine, I am surprised by my anger and judgment of the people who are trying to adhere to these ideas, but in my mind, keep doing them wrong. Am I broken? Currently, yes. Am I wrong to speak up or should I keep quiet? How do I look past these slights and spread the love I know everyone within a long arm's reach of me needs? With love, Broken.
Well, I think, Broken, you're not alone in feeling judgmental. I too feel judgmental. I was walking the other day past in my neighborhood park, socially distant, you know, from everyone around me.
Yeah.
But there were all these crowds of people playing basketball and soccer. And, you know, I wanted to strike them dead with my judgment. Not really, but I felt that burning sense of judgment that we feel when we know that we're right and they're wrong and we're behaving appropriately and they're behaving inappropriately. But so where do we put that? I think your question is twofold. One, should you speak up? The other, how do you manage these feelings? Because you know that feeling doesn't really serve you. It just kind of burns in your core and makes you feel annoyed and be grumpy to your you know, everyone around you, the very few people around you. So I would say first, you know, speak up in the context that I think that it will be done, do the most good, and also that you're able to deliver it in the most neutral, emotionally neutral way. You probably don't want to get in an argument with the kids playing basketball. Like, I didn't go up to them and say, "Hey kids, what are you doing?" Because that probably wouldn't have ended well. But can you use your networks, your social media platforms, your email, you know, to sort of spread information, again, not from you, but from the authorities, the officials, the experts who know that socially distancing matters? I would do that. That will make you feel like you're doing something good. And maybe that will kind of lift some of that reliance on personal judgment against others. Another thing I would do, and I think this is really applies to almost all of us who are really struggling with negative emotions that don't serve us. Things like anxiety, fear, shame, judgment, those are all in the same kind of bucket that like don't really allow us to sleep or move forward or be positive in our days, that we do all the things we do to manage that. Exercise, meditate, you know, what do you know, take a walk, you know, and clear your mind. Think about positive things. Think about things that make you feel grateful. And I find when I just make that mental shift, what I shift away from is that sense of judgment. Another one is empathy. You know, very often the reason that people make those decisions like play basketball in a group isn't because they want to do something bad or they want to harm you or others. It's that they just don't know. You know, a lot of the people, like a lot of teens and young people, for example, took a little longer to get to this social distancing. It wasn't because they have evil in their hearts. It's because it's really hard for them to conceptualize this really difficult thing, which is to say, you can't be around most of the people you care about and love and like. And, you know, it just took them a little longer to get there. So, you know, try to have compassion and empathy for those people who are making different choices than you, and know that those choices are not rooted in any sense of evil or harm. They're usually rooted in a kind of ignorance.
I'll tell you a brief story along those lines, which is that I tend to do a jog in my neighborhood, which is kind of borders a park, and it's very wooded. And 2 days ago, I went on the jog, and there was a guy in the park who I just felt like was kind of walking in the middle of the trail for no reason, which felt extremely selfish of him. And I went way out of the way to avoid him. And I kind of went up onto the side of the hill to just have my social distance. And for the rest of my jog, I was just thinking, like, what a jerk. And then this morning, I passed the same guy. And he actually did move over a little bit. And I realized that 2 days ago, he wasn't trying to put me in danger or send me a message. His head was probably somewhere else. This time, he did move over a little bit. And he looked at me and he said, good morning, as I was just like huffing and puffing past him. And I had a completely different relationship with him in my mind based on the interaction I had with him today versus yesterday. You know, and I feel like there's little versions of that happening all the time. Maybe a lot of people don't get day two with that person that's in the grocery store standing too close or who is in some way making them feel unsafe and kind of triggered. But I'm glad that I didn't scream at the guy yesterday because it would have made today very awkward when we passed each other again.
Totally. And, you know, I think that that's such a great example. Like, you know, we often take things personally that are not meant personally. Like, this man wasn't actually thinking, ha, 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 you know, I'm going to try to give you the coronavirus or get it from you and ruin the, you know, he's just not, for whatever reason, doesn't have the same, well, because he's a different person. He doesn't have the same experience or consciousness of you in that moment. And it's not a personal affront against you. It's that he's just not maybe received that same information that you have.
Yeah. I mean, I think most important to this segment is the fact that I was able to subtly brag about jogging 2 days in a row.
I know. Way to go, Burbank.
So I think I consider this a very successful Livewire house party.
This is an important question. Like, are you guys getting more exercise, less exercise, or the same amount of exercise? Because I'm getting pretty tired of all my friends on Facebook posting about how they did yoga every day since the pandemic started.
I am not getting any vigorous exercise done at all. The stuff that I should probably be doing, like strength stuff, you know, big cardio, but I take a really long, I can't not take this walk. Like, I find myself putting my shoes on even when it's raining, like an hour long walk every day. Like, it's very obvious that it's some part of my body other than my interest in bathing suit season or whatever needs me to go outside and take that walk. Are you, and you sounds like you're doing the same thing, Cheryl. You're taking walks too.
Yeah, I always walk, but mental health. I mean, I think right now we really need to go on our walks or do that yoga. I'm sort of mocking my friends that do yoga every day. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to do that as well. Honestly. I mean, I do think it's important that, you know, we know that there's that mind body connection and our minds tend to settle when we actually move our bodies. So yeah, I'm trying to do that in a non-braggy way, unlike Luke, who's bragging about that.
Well, I mean, I have said at the beginning of this, I'm going in one of two directions. Either at the end of this, I'm going to look like Kumail Nanjiani getting ready for his new superhero film, or I'm going to look like Marlon Brando getting ready for Apocalypse Now. There's no middle ground for me.
I have thought the same thing, actually, because I'm kind of doing both, you know, walking every day, also eating a half a pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream every day.
Oh, so my God.
We'll yeah. Well, Cheryl Strayed, thank you so much for taking time out of your actually busy schedule to help us and the Livewire listeners out this week.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Oh, thank you. It was such a delight to be on. And you never know, maybe Dear Sugar will be coming back.
Yeah, I mean, we need you right now, I'll tell you. So thanks again, Cheryl.
Bye-bye. Stay safe.
See ya. That was the incredible Cheryl Strayed. All right, we've got to take a quick break. You are listening to the Livewire House Party, Episode 1. I'm Luke Burbank at my house. Elena Passarello is over at her place. And we will be right back after this quick break. Stay with us. Hey, special thanks this episode to Nathan Corser and Kristen Miner of Portland, Oregon, and Dennis Hamlet of Portland, Oregon. Nathan, Kristen, and Dennis are part of the Livewire member community, and they generously support our show with a donation each month. We are extremely grateful for that support because it's genuinely what allows us to keep this show going, even the weeks we're doing it from our house. A big thanks to Nathan, Kristen, and Dennis for supporting Livewire. Welcome back to Livewire from PRX. I'm Luke Burbank, your host this week, episode 1 of what we are calling the Livewire House Party. For the foreseeable future, I'm going to be at my house here in Bellingham, Washington. Elena Passarello will be at her house in Corvallis, Oregon. And we'll have people joining us from wherever they might be. And, you know, what would a house party be without a little music? And Elena, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I certainly have. A lot of musicians I know are, of course, sort of trapped at home. And a lot of them are composing all kinds of music. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, in a way, a prime time to be making music because we don't have anywhere else to be. I noticed on Twitter that an old friend of mine, a guy named Charlie Brand from the band Miniature Tigers, is working on an entire new album while he is stuck at home. So I thought we should dial him up and see how it's going. Hey, Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you, Luke.
You are where right now?
I am in Los Angeles in my house here.
And you, I know your band Miniature Tigers, you guys were just on a big tour. Did you feel any kind of weirdness around shows and stuff at the end, or did you guys finish just ahead of this?
Yeah, so our tour ended February 15th, and while we were on tour is when you kind of started hearing about the corona thing, and I'm grateful we finished the tour when we did, because I have friends who are, you know, in smaller bands like we are, and were on tour and had to cancel their tours, and, you know, instead of making what little money they make during the year, had to go into debt.
Yeah. I mean, what are the kinds of things that you're hearing from your fellow musician friends about how they're financially trying to just keep slightly afloat right now?
I think a lot of bands, especially at this level, they make their money from touring. You know, we don't make a lot of money from streams. It's more just touring. So I think everybody's a little freaked out and doesn't really know what to do. I've talked to a lot of friends that have albums coming out around this time, and they're not sure if it's cool to promote it. They feel weird, you know, saying like, buy my album when there's, you know, this pandemic happening. I mean, my stance on that is that I feel like I try to imagine being quarantined without music or movies or TV, and I feel I think everybody would lose their mind. So I think people should be releasing music and making art and trying to put as much stuff out there. And, you know, I'm not going to hear about it unless you promote it. So I feel like people should be just plugging their music right now, or movies or art or whatever they're making.
Yeah. So when did you get the idea to try to record an album during this quarantine?
I was ready to make an album before the quarantine. And then I think something about this just made me feel less precious about it and less, let me spend a year making this and a whole, you know, 3 month album cycle promoting it. I just want to make something and put it out because, frankly, I have nothing else to do and I'm bored and I've got a lot of stuff to say. It's not a quarantine album. It's not like a political thing, like observing the empty streets and what's going on with society right now. It's not that kind of thing.
I'm sure Bruce Springsteen will have that covered anyway.
Bruce Springsteen's got that, so I'm not going to try to step on his toes. The quarantine is more of a backdrop, I think.
You'd mentioned to me when we were chatting earlier about how this is a breakup record.
Yeah.
That you're going through a breakup.
Uh-huh.
What's it like going through a breakup during the COVID epidemic?
It's interesting. I think I have a lot of friends that their exes are reaching out to them, and right now, because it's a scary time and everyone, I think, is feeling a little emotionally vulnerable. I don't know if it's better or worse. I know I'm not going to run into her anywhere, which is...
Put that in the plus category.
Yeah, put that in the plus category. But, you know, then I have moments where I wish I did have an opportunity to run into her somewhere, you know? I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, so you have been writing some music while trapped in your place in LA, and we're actually going to hear a song that you've been working on. What's the name of the song?
The song is called Bloomless, and I started writing this before we were all quarantined and then finished it. Well, it's almost finished. My goal is to finish recording it this week and maybe release it this weekend, hopefully.
Okay, so this is Charlie Brand from Miniature Tigers playing here on the Livewire House Party.
I'm miserable, tangled in the sheets, 35 with a mattress on the floor. Called Heidi on FaceTime yesterday. I'm not crying, it's just my allergies. was fiction, just like my freedom was. I just needed time. Now my worldview is so negative. Without you, my life is bloomless, bloomless. Flowers don't grow since you went away. Ruthless, so ruthless. When she moved out, she took the bed frame. I'm vulnerable in my head, and when you text me, I'm filled with dread. If it's freedom I'm all about, then why am I having these doubts? Your Stevie Nicks, I was your biggest fan. Now I'm Lindsey Buckingham out of the band. I wanna call you, but I know I can't, because you're no longer mine. Bloomless, bloomless. Flowers don't grow since you went away. Ruthless, so ruthless. When she moved out, she took the bed frame. I can't do this, I can't do this.
Charlie Brand of Miniature Tigers right here on the Livewire House Party down in Los Angeles, California. Can I ask you a real question? Did you really lose the bed frame in the breakup?
Yeah, that is true.
Oh, brutal. What is the policy on me shipping you one?
I have a new bed frame. Yeah, no, I have a bed frame.
Okay. All right, Charlie. Good to see you, brother.
All right. Love you, Luke. Thanks for having me.
That is going to do it for the Livewire House Party, Episode 1. Thank you so much, everybody, for spending the time with us. I'm Luke Burbank. We are going to be back next week with another edition of the show. By the way, a huge thanks to our guests this week, Cheryl Strayed, John Mualim, and, of course, Charlie Brand. Livewire is brought to you in part by Foley, Alaska Airlines, and the Jupiter Hotel. And I just want to say, before we go, that this completely new version of our show could not have happened without the flexibility and creativity and hard work of our amazing Livewire staff. Who are we talking about, Passarello?
Oh, we're talking about Laura Haddon, our executive producer, Tim Harkins, our production director, our producer and editor, who's Melanie Sevchenko, and Ariana Donneville, our marketing associate. Caitlin Kunkel is our writer, and Molly Pettit is our awesome technical director.
Additional funding provided by the Regional Arts and Culture Council and the James F. and Marion L. Miller Foundation. Livewire was created by Robin Tenenbaum and Kate Sokoloff. Our show is made possible by the generous support of our members. This week, we'd like to thank member Kenan Williams of Kenmore, Washington. For more information about our show or how you can listen to our podcast or sign up for our newsletter, head on over to livewireradio.org. For Elena Passarello and the whole LiveWire crew, this is Luke Burbank. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great week. Take care of yourselves and each other. And we'll see you next week.
PRX.
Dear LiveWire, when we first met, I was really shy. I had no idea we'd spend so much time together or that you'd be one to fill my heart with joy and make me want to be a better person. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were here. I was busy reading a review from one of our many, many rapturously smitten listeners. Oh, wait, actually, no, sorry, this is from Elena. Anyway, the point is, it would be really helpful if you wanted to leave us a review. Feel free to say really nice things about us, and we'll even read them now and then on the show, so you might hear your review of LiveWire read on the program itself. Reviews help other people hear about the show, and then we can keep doing this for a long, long time, because we love having this job. Thank you so much if you've left a review, and if you're about to leave a review, you can go ahead and do it right where you get the podcast.